A white man? No!
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Emily.
And we're back with another Criminal Minds recap with a pretty great episode.
It's a good one. Yes.
I like this one a lot. I remembered it.
I did too. I was thinking though that I was like when I saw like the description, mm-hmm. I was thinking I was misremembering it because for whatever reason, I remembered this happening later in the series.
Yeah.
But I've rewatched it several times, so I get really confused about when things happen. Yeah. Because, like, on some of the rewatches, I've skipped over episodes.
Yeah, like the
or
ones
like
you
jumped
know
to
it.
Episodes that I really like. You know, like I don't always watch them in order.
Right.
But I was really excited when I realized it was
yes.
this one.
We are discussing Safe Haven, which originally aired October 20th, 2010. And the moment I knew I was sure I remembered it was when the song started playing at the beginning. Like,
Yes. Yeah. So this one starts out with, there's like a woman, her hands are clearly tied behind her back. She's like rummaging through a drawer, like trying to reach up and rummage through a drawer looking for something. I don't know what.
Something to undo her hands, I guess.
Yeah,
I
it's
know.
Like the junk drawer in the kitchen that everybody has.
Yeah.
And there's somebody just flicking through the channels on the TV. Mm. And it finally lands on Fitz and the Tantrums song. Yes. And he leaves it and he's like, ah, yes, this is what I was looking for. But then we see that the husband is also tied up. They call out to their two kids and like tell them to wake up. And the mom says he took them from me. So it's unclear.
And you like can kind of see that there are kids in like an adjoining room or something, but you can't really see them.
Yeah. So it's unclear on whether or not they're actually alive.
Yeah.
Or not. But then the unsub comes in with a knife and starts beating and stabbing the man.
Mm-hmm.
And look, we don't see what happens after that.
You assume at this point that the kids are dead, right? Because you're watching him kill the dad.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know what? I wouldn't even be fighting back at that point if I had already watched him kill my kids.
No.
Just be like,
nope, we're done here.
Yeah. I'd be like, okay, go ahead and kill me. It's fine.
Yeah. So yeah, then we cut to the BAU. Garcia reports that all four members of the Bennett family were found dead in their home in Council Bluffs, Iowa this morning. Another family, the Archers, were killed in Omaha, Nebraska the night before. The mothers in both cases were bludgeoned, the fathers were stabbed, and the children were strangled. But in the second home, the husband was also like disemboweled.
Yeah.
Which they're like, that's a pretty huge escalation for a single night.
Yeah. And these are like two back to back, like one night and then the next night.
Yeah.
Like, it's busy.
I don't have that much energy.
No.
Can't do anything two nights in a row. So Ellie shows up at the BAU office, just walks in. She says that she somehow sneaked onto an airplane from LA. And flew here.
Well, she bought a ticket. She did buy a ticket.
Yeah.
But she just stayed. I mean,
how?
Look, this is...
This girl is eight.
This is post 9/11.
That's what I wrote. In a post 9/11 America.
Yeah.
Like, no.
No, she didn't. If this was pre 2001, I'd give it to you.
Yes.
Right?
Or in a world where
9/11
didn't
never
exist.
Happened. Yeah.
But we have established that it did, in fact, occur.
And we all know what a nightmare air travel is post 9/11.
Yeah.
So and still continues to be.
Yeah.
So there's no way.
Especially
an unaccompanied minor.
With kids?
Yeah. Just
like
walks
when I've
on a
flown
plane.
With my kids, you have to like have their birth certificates.
Right.
And
like no, she's like, I just stood next really close to another family so people would assume I was with them. Like
no.
People aren't making assumptions about kids getting on planes. That's not how this works.
Yeah.
And she's still in that really bad wig.
Yes. And it was reminding me of do you like that the episode of Full House where they accidentally fly to New Zealand?
Uh-huh.
Like they get on the wrong plane because they're going to Auckland instead of Oakland.
Yeah.
And it's like, at least that happened in 1994. 4 or something. Yeah. Like, you can't just sneak on a plane.
No. No. Nope.
She says if anybody would have asked her any questions, she would have said she was 12 because you could fly alone. And I was like,
and
another
you are 12.
Reason why this character should just be 12. Like, you're telling me an 8-year-old has the wherewithal to buy themselves a plane ticket.
Right. To go online with a stolen credit card.
Yes. I have a hard time buying a plane ticket on the internet.
Uh-huh.
She bought the ticket, figured out how to navigate an airport in Los Angeles.
Got to the airport.
Yeah.
And so...
And then got from the airport to Quantico.
Did you map it? How far is...
I didn't. I don't even know. Would it be Dulles? 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 How do you say that?
I think it's Dulles. Dulles.
That's another... massive airport.
Yeah. Yeah.
She never would have made it out of the airport. She'd still be wandering around. Yeah.
I'd still be wandering around. I mean, you have to get on a tram at those big airports to go.
So then she, got on the train and took the train to Quantico? What?
Did she get a taxi? Did she still have the credit card? Could you pay in a taxi with a credit card at that time? I feel like you could not.
Probably not.
There's a lot of questions here, but she does it all in her bad wig, with her bad wig askew.
Yeah. It's a good thing she appears to be 12 and not 8. She never would have pulled this up. She tells Morgan that her foster home is terrible and that the older boy there tries to watch her in the shower.
She's really good. She's a great actress, this little girl. Like, you feel for her so much. She's lost everything. Yeah.
She's like, I didn't know where else to go. You're the only person I knew to go to. And you're like, you had his phone number.
Right.
You could have called first, and he would have flown out to get you.
He would have absolutely done that. Yeah.
And Morgan's like, all right, well, I got to work. Yeah. So I'm going to leave you here with my friend Garcia. So peace out.
Yeah. Can you imagine after she does all of that, she goes through all of those things to get to him. He's like, I'm actually getting on a plane and leaving right
now. Yeah. I've got to be at the airport. You know how far that is. Yeah. I got to go.
The wheels are up in 30. Yeah. Did you notice that it was only 30 this time?
Not like 3 hours?
A spree warranted the 30 minutes.
Yeah.
When it's just the one, they're like, we could take our time. And they're like, wheels up in 30.
So Rossi says that at the house, there were no forced entry and, the tables in the homes were set for 5, even though they were both families of 4. Since they live only 8 miles apart, despite being in different states, the team wonders if they would have known each other. And Garcia finds this very unlikely because they didn't frequent any of the same places, like same schools or stores or places of worship, because both families were very religious, with most of their social lives revolving around the church.
Mm-hmm. And they bring up in this discussion Carl Arnold.
I know. I wrote that down. I was like, what? They actually call back to one of their own cases. So they never do
there's
that.
There's 2 separate cases now because Ellie's there.
Yeah.
And now Carl Arnold, they're referencing 2 old episodes within this episode. It's like,
wow, it only took you 6 seasons to remember that these characters have past lives.
I mean, the world building they could do if they paid any attention to themselves, right? It would make the show so much more interesting.
Yeah.
Instead of, but I guess it's the kind of show that they want to be like, you don't have to have watched all 6 seasons to watch it.
Yeah.
It's not that
like,
deep.
You get a little bit more out of it if you've watched more.
Yeah, but you don't have to. You could pick it up at any time.
It's basically like, well, it's like the difference between like when the X-Files was the monster of the week show and then it got into the conspiracy where you had to watch all of it.
Yeah. I mean, this is why shows like Law & Order SVU last for 24 seasons, right? Like, you don't have to have watched all 24 seasons of SVU.
You're like, who's this new detective? It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
So Reed and Rossi go to the crime scene, the Bennett's house. They guess that the unsub must use the children as bait, and they do the whole thing where they like visualize it, and the unsub ties the 2 kids up, and then the mom comes up, and the unsub like
gets
blitz
her from
attacks
behind.
Her,
yeah,
and then the dad comes in, and the same thing happens again.
Mm-hmm.
And Rossi notes, because they go down the kitchen, Reed's like, ooh, they were having tacos.
Yes.
And Rossi notes that, like, they were making ground beef and some sort of tofu filling as well. And he's like, if you were being forced to make dinner, like, at knife point, would you make something so elaborate?
Yeah.
So, like, clearly this unsub must have been their guest. Mm-hmm. And they also note the unsub didn't seem to have brought a gun.
Right.
And only used items from the house in the attack.
Which they claim makes him disorganized. That doesn't seem disorganized to me.
The weird thing to me is, like, Yeah, it's like, well, maybe he didn't bring a gun, not because he's disorganized, but because he
already knew there would be things there he could use.
But, like, if you... I'm just trying to think, like, if you, like, came in my house and you were like, I need to tie this family up, like, it would take a while to find
something.
The things. Like, I don't own a belt. Like, one of the people is, like, tied up with a belt, you know? You'd have to, like, go rifling through my kids' closets to maybe find a belt. I don't know that I could find a belt in their closet.
I'm trying to think of where you could find a belt here other than, like, the one that Nate sometimes wears. So maybe it's on his body already.
Yeah.
But then, like, what else would you use?
Because they say it was, like, a belt and a jump rope and tape and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't have...
And how, yeah.
Like, it would take some time.
It would take time to gather
those things. To dig through
in
a house that you were not familiar with.
True. It would, I mean, I'm familiar with my house, and it'd still take me some time to find all that
stuff.
Yeah,
I had to wrap a present the other day, and it took me a long time to find tape.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know why that wouldn't make them think, like, oh, maybe this person is familiar with the home.
Right.
Like, they're like, oh, they must have known him, but not, like, this person... would have to have spent
a little bit of time here
to have any idea where to find those things.
Or they would have had to trust this person enough to let them wander around on their own.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to be like, wait here while I go look for more tape.
Yeah. You guys got any tape around here? No reason. I just like to know where it is in case. So in both cases, the dads died faster and the moms were made to suffer.
Mm-hmm.
We learned that Sandra Bennett was a teacher and Monica Archer was a nurse, and both women were very active in volunteering in the community at, like, soup kitchens and, like, at different medical outreaches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they wonder if possibly the unsub might have been another person that volunteered with them that would have appeared to be, like, a stable person that they could trust to be in their home and around their children. So then we cut to a street. And this is a great scene.
Yes,
I like
is.
What they did here.
Uh-huh.
There's a man and he's driving a truck. He sees a kid walking alone down the street. So he pulls over, introduces himself as a reverend and offers the kid a ride. He tells him he shouldn't be walking with his back to the traffic because you can't see, like, he should be on the other side of the road. And the kid's like, oh, like, he offers him a ride to the gas station up the road. And the kid's like, I don't know, my parents told me never to get in the car. And he's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
And he gets in and there's like.
He seems like such a red flag. This reverend is so off-putting.
Yeah. So he gets in, and there's, like, some ominous music playing. And clearly there was a commercial break there at some point. Because we come back. It's the next morning. The team's at a body dump. They go down. They say that the person was found in the passenger seat of the car. We get down. We look in the car. And it's actually the reverend.
Yes.
Who's dead.
It's such a good bait and switch.
It is.
You're expecting it to be the kid.
Yeah. But he was stabbed. It looks like he stabbed in the neck.
Yeah.
And then... the arm was, like, dissected and cut up.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid was the murderer the whole time.
Yeah.
And the kid is, I don't remember what the actor's name is, but he's been in a ton of stuff.
I didn't even look him up. He's really good.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's been in, like, he was in an episode of Seventh Heaven and an episode of House and an episode of SVU and Scrubs and ER and Bones. He's just been in, like.
He's been in everything.
Yeah. So they're talking about how, like, weird it is that it's like, oh, he had so much rage and he, like, stabbed the guy while he was driving. Then the car crashed and then he tried to drive it away, but the car wouldn't start. But then he was calm enough to do all of the dissecting of the arm. And they're like, wow, it's almost like he has, like, ADHD. And they, wonder between, like, the mood swings and the short attention span and wonder if the unsub could be a kid because a kid would be inherently non-threatening and
impulsive.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So Rossi, Reed, and, oh, sorry. I just read that part. Cut that out, Nate. So then we cut to Jeremy, who's sitting at a rest stop, and he watches a family go into the house, and the mom, who is it Mayor Winningham?
Yeah.
Mary? I don't know.
I think it's Mayor.
Mayor? Yeah. She's, like, the quintessential mom in everything. She's so
including
good.
Grey's Anatomy, yes. where she plays Susan Grey. Yes.
But yeah, she sees Jeremy is putting on a big show of struggling with the vending machine, and she asks if we're okay. And then we cut to a profile, just out of nowhere.
Yeah. So yeah, we go back and forth between the profile and then his interaction with Mayor Winningham and her family. So this kid is streetwise, but clearly comfortable and easily accepted in a middle-class suburban home. We can't diagnose anyone under the age of 18 as antisocial, so we are labeling this unsub as a budding psychopath. And then
equally medical plausible. Yes. They're like, it would be, you know, medically irresponsible of us to call
to put
him
a label on this
to
kid.
To label him as antisocial, so we're going to call him a psycho.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shut up, you guys.
And it cuts to Jeremy, who is telling the sob story about how he got left behind by a bus at this rest stop in the middle of nowhere. Because it pulled, like, every time she has a question, he has a great answer for her. He's like, well,
none of them really make sense, but he answers so quickly that you're like, well, this kid doesn't have time to make this stuff up
right.
on the fly.
Yeah. So like the bus pulled over because someone wasn't feeling well and he decided to run into the bathroom. And when he got back, the bus was gone. And yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
His interpersonal skills are through the roof. Now, this manipulation is not just a ruse. It's a complex con. Look for
same thing.
Look for missing children's reports in and around the city of Omaha. This is where his killing spree originated. Check juvenile detention centers and psychiatric facilities for boys who've been recently released or escaped. We believe he's crossed the state line into Iowa. His last victim was traveling northeast on Route 6. And one of the local guys is like, how has a kid gotten 40-some miles all on his own? They're like, well, they all give him rides and places to stay. He appears extremely vulnerable, being a child alone out on the road. That's not hard to do. And
maybe he should have just bought himself a plane ticket on the internet.
Right? He could have gone anywhere.
They're like, oh, it's more believable. I know an 8-year-old child who's just traveled thousands of miles across the country.
You'd
on her
be
own.
Surprised what these kids can do. And so it cuts to Mayor Winningham, who says she's going to take him to the police station so the police can help locate his mom because he's like, his mom's not home. He was meeting her in Chicago.
He didn't memorize her cell phone number. Yeah. He left his phone on the bus.
So there's like an answer for everything. And they pull up to this police station where there's like a violent altercation with two cops and a man they've arrested
Which
in the parking lot.
I forgot where they were. And I was like, oh, like it's supposed to be Chicago. And like, you know, and then it's like Des Moines Police Department. Crime capital of Iowa.
Yeah. And so it's just that's the end of the profile, really, because now we're just watching the nonsense that happens at the police station.
But yeah, like Jeremy acts really scared to go inside, and then the two kids are like, "Mom, if we got lost, would we have to go to jail too?" And she's like, "That's it. You're coming home with us."
Right.
Which makes no sense.
No, especially because the older of these two kids, who also seems to be a teenager or close to being a teenager, knows better than to say crap like that. Like, it doesn't make
sense.
He's
like, is he going to have to share a cell with that guy?
Yeah.
He's not going to jail.
Right.
The police are going to find his mother.
Yeah.
Like, this is stupid.
Yeah. But she falls for it and she's like, get back in the car. We're all going home. Together.
Yeah. She's like, we'll come back in the morning. And you're like, there's just going to be another violent criminal being wrestled to the ground outside the police department
Des Moines,
tomorrow.
Remember, it's a hotbed of criminal activity.
But yeah, Garcia and Morgan discuss what they're going to do with Ellie. Morgan wants to get her records transferred to Virginia, and Garcia says this is possible since what happened to Ellie was clearly neglect because the family didn't even know she was gone.
Yeah, which is insane.
Yeah. So Reed says that this kid must have grown up in a home of comfortable socioeconomic status, but that he had to have been removed from his home at some point because of abuse or neglect, leading to this like insurmountable rage that he feels at times. Reed has narrowed it down to about 10,000 kids in the system. Yikes. So
the local guy is so annoyed at Reed's thought process while he's explaining
all
of this.
Because he's like, So we've got these clusters of 10, and Prentiss is like 10 kids, and he's like, each of those clusters, like 10 clusters represents 1,000 kids. So we've got 1,000 kids. But then we've narrowed it down further, and then we've narrowed it down further, and you're like, why are you wasting our time with everything leading up?
Yes, which is what the local guy's face says when he's like, oh my God, just like, tell me.
Yeah.
Look, I've got 9 dead people here.
Yeah.
It's been 3 days, 9 dead people.
Like when the cashier at the store tells you how much money you owe for the things you're buying, you don't need them to break it down.
Right.
Well, first I added these two together and then I weighed the apples. And the apples were $1.99 a pound. Like, you don't need to know that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he has narrowed it down to 33 boys between 10 and 17 who were abandoned in hospitals under the state's safe haven law because it doesn't have an age discrimination.
Which I was like, I'm sorry, what? People are dropping teenagers off at just like get out of the car and drive away quickly. Like,
yeah, I saw teenagers with notes pinned to their jackets.
Like, what?
Like, I'm just imagining.
I'm sorry, what?
Like, your teenager's so out of control that you can't handle them anymore, so you're going to drop them off with a note pinned to their jacket. The teenager's just going to sadly stand there in the rain while you pin a note to their jacket.
I have so many questions. I just kept writing what in all capital letters.
Oh, it's so weird. Mm-hmm. But they think that Monica, who is a nurse at Omaha General or whatever the hospital was, may have met the unsub there. Mm-hmm. So Jeremy and the kids are playing video games while the mom, whose name, Mary Winningham, whose name we don't know yet, cooks dinner. She asks Jeremy to call his home number so she can leave a message for his mom that he's staying with them and that he's safe and everything. Jeremy like tries to get out of it for a minute. She's like, just call. I just want to leave a message. And he pulls out Monica's card from the hospital where she'd written her name on the back and dials that number.
Yeah.
Which was very smart. Mm-hmm. So he knows nobody's going to answer.
Right.
So the mom, Nancy, leaves a message and Jeremy like just really awkwardly and grossly watches her chopping up a chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't love it.
Yep.
So the team talks about what happens to unwanted children in the system. And you can just see on Morgan's face that he's projecting all of that onto Ellie. Yeah. He's just like, sad puppy dog face.
Yep.
Rossi suggests that Monica may have subverted protocol in order to keep this kid out of the system. Hutch sends Rossi and Reed to the Archer's house to go dig around. And Nancy puts Jeremy to bed on the sofa and he asks her please to not turn out all the lights. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm not scared. It's just, and she's like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah. Like, oh,
this kid is a bucket of red flags.
Yeah, seriously.
So at the Archer's house, they get there and they're like, I don't know what you're going to find. And Rossi's like, hey, there's messages on the answering machine. Should we listen to those? And just immediately they, hear the message from Nancy and know that the killer is in her house. Mm-hmm. Morgan and Prentiss rush over to Nancy's house and like, how long?
I mean, it's the next morning. It's daylight whenever they're at the Archer's and we watched her put Jeremy to bed.
Yeah.
I was assuming they'd all be dead.
Yeah.
And he would have moved on because now it's the day, right? Is that what you were thinking too?
Yeah. And then also they have to drive there?
Right.
To wherever.
Well, it's all close together, apparently.
That's true. I don't know how far Council Bluffs is from
Omaha, right? Where the Archers
are. Omaha to Council Bluffs to Des Moines. I didn't look any of this up.
No, I didn't either. I guess I can do it right now while you're talking.
So they all rush over there. They find the kids tied up, but they're still alive.
Shockingly.
Yes. They say that he took Nancy and he's making her drive him somewhere. Mm-hmm. So she, in the car, she tells Jeremy that his mother shouldn't have left him and that she's sure that his mom is very sorry. And Jeremy's like, oh, she will be. Like, ugh. So Morgan and Prentiss talk to the kids and the kids tell them that the mom was like weirdly nice to Jeremy. And they were like, yeah, he tied us up and she told him that she knows he's not a bad kid and that he has a good heart and offered to drive him wherever he wanted. And Morgan and Prentiss are like, yes, she was trying to get him out of the house and keep you alive. Mm. Your mom's very smart.
And it worked.
Yeah.
It says it's 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I really, the Midwest is a mystery to me.
My only interaction with any of those states is driving through them on the way to Colorado. And it's just,
Or flying over them.
Yeah. It's just like 16 hours of corn. So yeah. I don't know where any of these things are.
Interesting. Yeah, I've not spent much time in the greater Omaha area, but apparently all these places are close together. I guess they finally did a little Googling of geography.
Nice. Jeremy tells Nancy in the car that he likes science and asks her whether she ever wonders what's under her skin. And she's like
nope. No. Nope, never have. So he's doing this ridiculous knife play, running his finger along it, twirling it,
which is
it
hilarious
on his face
because, like, I'm trying,
I know 13 year olds.
We know a lot of 13-year-olds. There's no way that one of those kids wouldn't just be like, I like science and, oh, God, yeah. I can't yes. There's no way.
It would be really hard for a 13-year-old to be intimidating in that way. Just be like, what are you doing?
Another thing that I just thought of with, he's using all of these people's knives just from their house. Mm-hmm. And then I was just thinking,
my knives are so dull.
I know. I was just thinking the other day, I got a rotisserie chicken and I had to sharpen my knife so I could cut it up.
Rotisserie chickens are mush. Dull.
Man, nobody would ever be able to stab me.
You would
to death.
Really suffer under Jeremy's hand.
I know.
Because all your knives
They'd
are
be,
so
They'd be like trying
dull.
To stab me, and I'm like, just beat me to death with a knife. Honestly, this is. I haven't sharpened these ever. Just.
The other thing I was thinking, though, is how easily she just takes a kid into her house. The legal repercussions. I would not want some unknown kid in my house. I would have just taken him into the police station. No, you're going to be
even
fine.
If he was, and he was acting like a 7-year-old.
Right.
Which is I'm scared to go in there. I'd have been it's a police station. They're going to take care of you. Let's go.
Yeah.
I would not have taken that kid home. I would have taken him into the police department.
Yeah.
And handed him over to the proper authorities who were better able to help him than me.
Right. It just doesn't make any sense.
It did not. The team looks through reports of kids that were abandoned at hospitals or whatever, and they find a kid that was abandoned in Omaha, and his name was Nico Bellick from Newton, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is absolutely shocked to find that Rossi knows that Nico Bellick is a character from Grand Theft Auto 4, because he brings it up and he's like, what? I know things.
Yeah.
I love the idea that Rossi would just go home, enjoy a glass of Pinot and a plate of spaghetti, and then spend the rest of his evening just playing GTA. And Morgan, meanwhile, contacts Garcia and asks her to please find Ellie's mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I forgot that Ellie had a mom.
Me too.
I thought she was dead.
Me too. I was like, wait, that was an option this whole
and
time?
And Garcia's like, I don't know. Los Angeles authorities couldn't find her anywhere. People aren't that hard to find.
Right.
If they're just not.
No.
I can find just anybody on the internet and find something about them.
Right. Have you tried Googling her name?
And it's not like this woman was trying not to be found.
Right.
She just moved.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he's like, well, they're not you.
They're not you, baby girl.
She's like, all right, Chocolate Thunder, I'm on it. So in the car, Jeremy insults Zach and tells Nancy that Amber's going to be hot someday and that he could sneak into their house. And I feel like I would just open the door and kick that kid out of the fucking street.
Mm-hmm. But she does everything right.
Yes. Nancy's like, you could just come over for dinner.
knock
and
on the front
like,
door.
No, you think I'm a bad kid. And Zach is bad too. And she's like, okay. Jeremy says that his mom blames everything on him. And Nancy's like, no, you just need love and attention. That's the only thing that's wrong with you. And Jeremy's like, all right, well, just let me out here and I'll just walk the rest of the way home. Mm-hmm. She's like, no, I'll drive you. And he's like, I'm not stupid. I'm not going to tell you where I live.
Yeah.
She's like, so he tells her to admit that he can't stand him and she won't do it. So he stabs her in the stomach and then gets out of the car, steals a skateboard, and just skateboards away. The little
real menacingly
punk that he is. Just wipes the blood off on his kitchen knife and skateboards off. So Morgan and Prentice, the funny thing about that is there was a bike and a skateboard
right
next to each other.
Skateboard.
And he picked the skateboard.
Yeah, well.
Just get on the bike.
This is another proof that kids aren't rational thinkers.
Yeah. It's like, which one's cooler?
Which one will I look cooler on?
So Morgan and Prentice tell Garcia that this kid that they're looking for probably tortured his siblings, and Garcia mentions that she's an only child, which we know later isn't
true. Is not true.
I mean, I think we know
earlier in P-911.
Oh, yeah.
She talks about her brothers.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I know, I can't remember later on if they're stepbrothers.
Mm. Or foster brothers, maybe, right? Because her parents died when she was young.
But either way, they appear to be people that she spent significant amount of time with in her childhood,
yeah.
Like, as the character develops. And it's like, if you, I don't know, like, you might call yourself an only child if you're, like, your mom's only child. But if you grew up with three stepbrothers or something, you still wouldn't be referring to yourself as like an only child in this context where she's like, I don't know what it's like to have siblings.
Right.
Like,
unless they were like significantly older or significantly younger.
I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
So Garcia looks for currently truant children whose younger siblings spent time in the ER and finds one where the little girl had like a spiral fracture.
Yeah.
Which is, Prentice says this from like having your arm twisted behind your back.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that sounds painful.
Mm-hmm.
Jeremy like moves a brick, finds the key, and walks into his house just as Garcia is finding his address online. Jeremy walks into the house and asks his little sister, who's sitting there with a cast on her arm, if she wants to play a game.
Yeah. Like, poor little girl.
Yeah. She's like, no. And is like clearly terrified to see him there.
Yeah.
So Jeremy's mom is pulling up to the house in the car. She's talking to her mom about her abandonment of Jeremy. Her mom clearly doesn't approve of this, but also doesn't want to take him in.
Yeah.
She says that Jeremy is dangerous and lists a few times, like, finding, like, rye poison in their food.
Yeah.
And
neighbor's dogs disappearing. Yeah.
Like, she knows that he's bad news and was like, no, I needed him to be somewhere where they could, like,
Care for him
in ways that she
clearly can't. I still don't think just
can.
Dropping him off at a hospital and driving away was the way to get him the help he needed. So I can't say I'm her biggest fan.
No, I feel like there are other
like getting
mental health services you could avail yourself of.
Getting him into some sort of residential treatment program.
Yeah.
Something, not just driving away from him.
With a note pinned to his shirt.
Yeah.
This kid is bad. Yeah. So Prentice calls her and finally gets through to her. They have to, like, keep calling, and she keeps ignoring the call.
Which is the only realistic part of this series.
Yeah, she's like, I don't know anybody with this area code. Ignore.
Yeah, which is exactly what I would do.
Finally Prentice gets through to her and lets her know that Jeremy's headed to the house, and she looks over, sees that the brick has been moved, and knows that he's already there.
What's interesting, too, though, is that they say something about her son. She's like, I don't have a son. And we know, like, the little girl still has... The cast is
It's
new.
Been 10 days.
So that is really swift to just be like, that he doesn't exist, right? It's bizarre to me.
Yeah. It's not like they, like, picked up and moved to another location to hide from him and are pretending he doesn't exist.
Right. Like she literally just dropped him off last week.
It's been less than 2 weeks.
Weird.
They're like, we're going to be there in 2 minutes. Don't go in the house. And she's like, my daughter's in the house. Of course I'm going in the house.
Yeah, which same.
Yeah. So Jeremy's mom finds him with a knife to the little girl's throat. He's like, this is so.
Look, this is where we jump the shark, folks.
Yeah.
It's
like, get the fuck out of here.
If you thought this mom wasn't likable just for the fact that she dropped her teenager off with the note pinned to his coat and then pretended he never existed, it's about to get worse.
So she's like, he's like, say it, say what I heard you. And it's like, this kind of exposition is so stupid.
Yeah.
Because it's like, he knows, she knows.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have a conversation like this. The only reason you're having this conversation is for the benefit of the audience.
And guess what? We get no benefit from this. This was better left unsaid.
I was, no. He's like, tell him what you told Father Quincy. Yeah. And she's like, one day I was pregnant with twins, and then suddenly I wasn't. And they said that one of the twins consumed the other one in utero. And they're like, oh my God.
So you're telling me this adult woman thinks one fetus literally like chomp, 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 ate up
its
twin.
You may have misunderstood what the doctor meant by that. That just one of them died and then the other one absorbed the other twin. Yeah. That's a thing that happens sometimes.
You think he like cannibalized the other fetus in the womb? Yeah, and you've blamed him for that his whole life?
His whole life. And she's like, you know, you think that I hated you because of that, but I hated you from the beginning because, like, I knew you were rotten to the core.
Yeah, I hated you when you were inside of me.
Screaming. And you're like, oh, so this mom's a psycho.
Right. Like, okay. I mean, I already felt bad for this kid because of the circumstances of his life. But, I mean, whoa.
Yeah. It's a bit much.
This is obviously an abusive situation.
Yes. So Morgan tells Jeremy to let his sister go, and he's like, you're not going to shoot me, I'm a kid. And Morgan's like, oh, I will put a bullet in your brain.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, oh, okay. So he lets his sister go, and as Jeremy is dragged out, he cries out to his mom for help. Mm. But as soon as they're, like, out of earshot, he just stops, and they're, like, putting him in the car, and he's like, I'm 13, I'll see her again in 5 years. And Morgan's like, not if I can help it.
Well, I mean, I know he's 13, but you're telling me he wouldn't be tried as an adult for those crimes? 9 people? He killed 9 people.
Brutally, too. Right? And I don't always agree that it's a good thing to, like, try. Like, no, I don't think that
this
adults...
is obviously someone who's not safe to be in society.
Yeah. Like, I don't think that kids, like, 13-year-olds should be tried as adults.
No.
But I do think that if that's legal in Nebraska or Iowa or wherever they are...
That would be an automatic thing. Yeah. I'm not even saying that I agree with it. I'm just saying, isn't that, like, the...
I think that he would be. And also, I think that that is more than enough to... keep him well past that 18th birthday. They're not just automatically going to release him.
Right.
Because he turned 18.
Right. It's like, not like he killed one person. This was a spree. Hotch says it's a spree.
It's a spree. And like clearly he's probably just going to go to whatever juvenile facility that he's in and continue to be horrible.
Right.
So he's not ever getting out of anything.
No.
So Nancy, we learn on the plane, is going to be fine.
Thank goodness. Yes. And Hodge is actually impressed. He says he's impressed with Nancy.
Yeah. He's like, she did everything right.
Saved her family.
Her kids. And Jeremy's family wants to know if and when he's ever released.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, well, peace out. Let us know.
Yeah.
And Rossi's like, also the BAU should keep tabs on him because if he is released, we're just going to be hunting him down again in like 10 years, mm-hmm. but sure. So Morgan says that Garcia found Ellie's mom, but he doesn't trust her since she left Ellie. And Hotch is like, you know, Ellie's mom probably didn't leave her. She left a bad marriage mm-hmm. and like Ellie, like knew that Ellie was safer and more, or like in a more stable situation with her dad.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, Hotch, are you speaking from experience?
He's like, wow, Hotch is siding with Ellie's mom. Yeah. Weird.
He's like, much like my wife left a bad marriage and took our son, and I ignored him because he was better
as,
off with
as
his
I continue
mom.
To do now.
Yeah. Yep. Now that he's with me, I continue not to be a part of his life because it's more stable.
And
that
just
way.
Remember how much better off he used to be before the circumstances of my life had his mom killed. So,
Ellie is pretty mad at her mom when they get there. Mm-hmm. Ellie's mom said that she had been out of the country. I had no idea what even happened with Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And she apologizes to her and said that she was so unhappy that she knew it was making Ellie unhappy and couldn't mm-hmm. stand what she was doing to her. And just needed to like get away so that Ellie could be happy.
Mm-hmm.
She pulls out a book that's like journals and postcards and photos and stuff that mm-hmm. she has written to like a letter to Ellie every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellie's like, I don't care. Get it away from me. And Morgan's like, hey, I lost my dad too. I lost my dad just like you lost yours.
Mm-hmm.
And like my mom has always been there for me and you need to give your mom a chance. And Ellie opens the book and she like looks at her mom and she's like, I remember you used to read me stories. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's very cute.
Mm-hmm.
And Ellie thanks Morgan and looks up at her mom and smiles.
Yeah.
And then we get our quote.
The weirdest ending quote ever.
But I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. And miles to go before I sleep. Robert Frost. Because, you know, Morgan made a promise.
Right.
And that was the first thing that came up when they Googled quotes with promises.
It's not a great ending quote. Not my favorite. So I did not make a decision on these statistics. Would you count Jeremy as a white man or not a white man, seeing as how he is Only 13. Are you trying him as an adult? Where would you put him for statistics? I didn't feel comfortable making this decision on my own.
I feel like statistically he does not belong
in the white man category.
Right. I feel like he is an outlier.
Mm-hmm. He was purposefully different than a regular white man. That was my initial thought too, but I didn't want to go rogue and you'd be like, no, he was a white 13-year-old. No,
because it would have been one thing if he was like 17 years old, but this is a 13-year-old child. Yeah. That is, I mean, like we said, we know a lot of 13-year-olds.
They are children.
They are children.
Yeah.
Like, they're not men.
Right. That's very true.
Definitely not men.
Well, you'll be shocked to learn that we are now for season 6, 5-1, bringing us to a whopping 83% white men for season 6.
Fantastic.
Don't be too shocked. Overall, we are 113, or no, I'm sorry. I just added it to the wrong one after we just talked about it. We are 112-24 overall, 82.4% white men. How would you rate this profile as far as accuracy, helpfulness, and plausibility on a scale from 1 to 10?
I mean, pretty low. I mean, the reason they found him was because the mom left the message and they got her phone number.
Again, it's the regular
And they were talking about, like, and looking for people that had escaped from juvenile facilities and foster care and stuff, and that was not the situation that he was in.
Right.
So that would have led them down the wrong track, which would have then wasted an enormous amount of time.
Also true. And, like, they explained a lot of the psychology that would have been really good for, like, Mayor Winningham to know, because she's the one that had to use psychology on him.
Yeah.
They just went in with their guns pointed at him.
Yeah. And we're like, I'll shoot you in the head if you don't let your sister go right now.
So I guess accurate and plausible, but not really helpful to them to do their jobs.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like a 5, would you give it like a middle of the road? Maybe. I feel like the helpfulness is the biggest part for me.
Yeah.
The whole point of them giving locals the profile is to be helpful.
Does it do any good in helping them find this bad guy?
Yeah.
And it did not.
9 times out of 10, they just show up and also do more regular police work with Garcia to do the heavy lifting, and then they solve the case. It's not related to the profile. But
yeah, I know. It should technically be very, very low, but the episode is so good.
I know. It's a really good episode. Well,
but that doesn't have anything to do with the profile.
Yeah. I don't think we have anything to watch for Hotch because he's still full marks, and he did great in this episode, too. I wouldn't take anything away from him. The next episode, Devil's Night. Do you remember this one?
I didn't read the description. The
title doesn't, but the description, yes, I think so. I think it's going to be one of the ones as soon as it starts, I'll be like, oh, right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, I do remember this one.
So we have that to look forward to.
Yay.
Well, wherever you're listening, be sure to leave a 5-star review. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at The Unsub is a White Man. Our merch is on Redbubble. If you get any, make sure you tag us. We'll share you to our stories. Our theme music is composed and performed by Nate Youngblood, and the podcast is produced by Nate Youngblood. Thanks, Nate.
And until next week, we'll be studying Iowa's Journal.